Hey up, everybody. Welcome to another show. Welcome to another episode of Pop Flash. I'm your host, Semler, and joining me will be, as always, Thorin and Richard Lewis. We're here to talk about Pro League Season 15. We're about halfway through it now, just finished Group B the other day, and so we're going to get our two analysts' thoughts. We're going to get up to date on what they think is going on in the world of Counter-Strike run by ESL. So, guys, how's it going? Richard, let's start with you. How you doing, man? It's been a while.
Yeah, I know. It feels like it's been a while. Obviously, ESL Pro League takes up like such a big chunk of the calendar. You know, so many games with its round robin format, which I'm sure immediately I'm going to trigger Thorin into a rant.
There you are. All right. You know what buttons on.
See, I know. I just know now. It's like an old married couple, you know. But yeah, it's everything's great with me. We have had some good Counter-Strike, although I've got to say, this is probably the weirdest Pro League for a while. I mean, they all, because of the format, they always throw up a few kind of anomalies, but both of the groups that we've completed at the time of recording this are just fucking mental. Like, you couldn't have predicted the way they were going to go. And so, yeah, there's just loads to talk about.
Duncan, how are you doing?
Similar vibe. Like, here's the problem I have with Pro League overall is, it is essentially, if people don't realize, presented as like the flagship product of ESL. Like, that's the whole reason, if people don't know why, when we did the Flashpoint project a few years ago, it was to go directly head to head with this exact tournament. Because the notion is, this is supposed to be sort of the bread and butter of ESL. And then the idea is you have the Pro League season, and then you have, you know, your big prestige events that kind of eats in Cologne, and you have the smaller ones along the way. But the reason I say that is because for a bunch of years now, since we went online, they've gone to this like weird format where they use the round robin and stuff. If you remember, Pro League finals, like the groups used to be like I think similar to this in like the early group stage, but even then that was online, if you remember. And then it went to like the finals was just the typical ESL one, where it's the two double elim groups into the single elim 16 playoff. But I have to say, the problem I have with it overall is, like, my thoughts on format always go like this. I don't mind any format as long as you balance the whole calendar out. So in theory, because this is the one tournament ESL runs that does this format, I don't hate it in that sense. I just think if you're going to make it like your main tournament, I think it's a bit weird to have what I think is probably your worst format be for this particular one. You know, I would rather this just be like a one-off event, because the thing is, I've seen too many of these over the years. Like, if people don't know, back in CS 1.6, all of our group stages basically were always round robin, and so I noticed a lot of trends that you get in round robin that just happen, it seems, from the format, not from even the teams competing. And so one of them is, and it'll sound very counterintuitive to fans, but right, in the same way, here's the analogy I'll give you. When someone's in their era and they're the dominant team, Astralis, Na'Vi last year, right, you all know eventually they have a tournament like Na'Vi did towards the end of the year, where you just lose a game early on, or you actually start looking a bit dodgy early. But you know what? By the end of it, think of Blast World Finals. By the end of it, you get it all together and you're the best team and you win the tournament still. Because unfortunately, the way a competitor's mind works sometimes, I would say in most cases, is unless you like feel like the fucking sweat, unless you feel the burn of like, I could lose this game or I could win it all. That's actually why I think brings the best performance out of top players and competitors. Look, there are always going to be very unique outsider examples where you hear about the people who, you know, the Kobe Bryant people who practice all the time. And supposedly, if you ever hear the stories, they're even like that to play cards where, you know, they're just super competitive people who are driven. But most people aren't like that, unfortunately. Even top pros. I always say top pros, some of them are just normal people who have really good aim in Counter-Strike. That's just, you know, they're not actually some mutant human. They're just like you and me. They're just, in this scenario, in the same way as you might just give up halfway through a pog you lose, and they just phone it in certain games. So unfortunately, basically, the first two groups have enormous amount of turnover in terms of upset results. And crucially, it went exactly along this trend. Early on, when the elite teams weren't actually eliminated and at any moment could turn it around and win all the series and still qualify, they all looked terrible. And there was a world where, for real, like one of the top four teams in these two groups could have made it through. Like, FaZe obviously almost didn't make it. So we almost had a world where the favourites are just out immediately in the tournament. And then here's the reason why, to me, it has to be format, because this isn't just the only example now, but this example now is a perfect one. If you look at the way the teams turn it around when they do get to the elimination point, then you suddenly see them play real Counter-Strike. Suddenly they are like fighting for every map. It's nearly always close if they don't make it through. If everyone remembers last time when FaZe almost made it through, there was that one where they were in that group of Fnatic and everyone was like 3-2. At that point in time, it's like people get activated. So unfortunately, I do get the vibe that the format format sort of like throttles a little bit of the competition. Because I know it sounds weird to a fan, but for real, early on, if you still think, well, whatever, if I win the next three, whatever, I win the next two, well, if that person loses a series, it somehow it doesn't activate the players as much. So to me, I haven't really looked at like the results here as like a form guide, like this is how good the teams are, here's where they are. I've just more been looking for things like, how are the new rosters doing? How do people look at the shaping up? How do people do in this scenario? I'm thinking of it more of just like a general random day. It's not like the ultimate day of competition. So I think the results are definitely interesting. There's tons we can discuss because they're so crazy and all over the place. But I do think people maybe have done that thing we do in CS where people can be prisoners of the moment and they go a little bit too ham. Like in the Group A one, for example, I thought a lot of the criticism of G2 didn't make that much sense when you consider they only got like Alexi B back for the last two series. He is their in-game leader. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of kind of scuffed reasons, but plenty of narratives to talk about, certainly.
Well, why don't we just start right there? I mean, if that's the place to hop off on, I mean, G2, it feels like we can't quite have a tournament right now where everything runs perfectly, right? We don't have a roster issue. We don't have some player testing positive. We don't have somebody locked in a hotel room. You know, it's like one thing after another. We can't seem to get these teams with a smooth run, no controversy through the groups or through the playoffs. So it looks like it was G2's turn to come up where they're the ones who have snake eyes. They're the ones who were trying to find a way to make it work at the beginning. And to be fair, they started with a win over a team that they must beat, looking for org. And then it seemed to have gone south from there. So already thoughts on G2, I suppose, in this group. What was going on, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously they had to use Amanek as a stand-in. Amanek's still on the books over there, right? And I don't know, I'm guessing he was sort of doing IGL things. And that's all well and good when you're playing against like a New Zealand team that is literally looking for August then. It doesn't get more scuffed than that. And you know, look, those guys gave a pretty good account of themselves considering, you know, where they are in the overall hierarchy of Counter-Strike. But like, yeah, G2 should win that game. But you realize things are going to go awry from the Mouse Sports game. For me, I kind of feel that there was just something missing. Well, listen, I say something. His name was Nico. You know, he's had a weird moment now in his career where in these games that you expect him to shine and kind of like carry the team through, he has gone missing a little bit. Now, I don't buy into cheap narratives, you know, things like everyone calling him Choco. I mean, it's the second game in a fucking round robin state, isn't it? It's not a choke. The stakes are still pretty low, but he didn't have a great performance against Mouses, I should say. Then they go up against Fnatic, Amanek still, and yep, Nico steps up a little bit, but Fnatic just had an absolute, like, just monstrous series. They lost the first one. It was close, 16-14, but they brought it in. And they themselves, by the way, were playing with three stand-ins.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? And it's Poison, who's come out of nowhere, drops almost 80 kills against G2 in a three-map series, and they beat them on Dust2, 16-2.
That feels so cursed. The idea of Poison just appears out of the fucking clouds to drop that series on you.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's like, you know, the unfortunately, we can like, so on a day's broadcast, like you sit down, you tune into yourself. You know, I've been watching all the games every day, right? You know, you get up, you have your cup of tea, cup of coffee, whatever you do, and you sit there and I watch it right the way through. On a day-to-day basis, the narratives are fantastic with all this weird, fucked up, scuffed shit that's happening. But the problem you've got is at the end of the tournament, all it's going to show is that G2 failed to get out the groups again for back-to-back pro leagues. All of the fact that, you know, Poison emerges and does crazy things against you, and Alexi B wasn't there for three of the series, and Nico went missing in another series. None of these asterisks are actually remembered. That's the thing people need to sort of understand about asterisks. Everyone always goes, oh, well, there's an asterisk next to that one. No one reads them. No one reads them.
Really, in the bottom of the contract.
Yeah, exactly. No one reads those. So G2.
That's just the stuff that basically in 3 years, I'm just going. And then the score esports don't even, look at this, they've got it wrong. They thought he was in the final. Exactly. He wasn't even playing. There was a sub that time. Yep. Get him out of esports. That's about the only time it ever gets referenced.
Well, so for example, I mean, you know, it's funny you bring up the score esports. You know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that, you know, they're going to drop a video 3 months down the line talking about how underwhelming Alexi B's been as an IGL.
Yeah, there you go, based, could be. Yeah,
based on a NATO Sapphix tweet and fucking based on the fact that they think he actually, you know, competed here when, of course, he missed the first three. But I saw community people jumping on his back as well. It's really weird. Yeah. So, look, I mean, for me, G2, it was just hard to gauge them with everything that was going on around them, all the anomalies in the games. Sure, I think the squad should be doing better, but just weird circumstances all round. And we've got to get to a point where they need their five to play and play in a LAN and play consistently without anyone getting COVID with their coach behind them, because that's been another factor in other events as well, before we can really judge the ceiling for this team. So just a weird campaign for them overall. Crashing out, disappointing, sure, but as I said, and as we'll go through, nothing normal happened in this Pro League across the board. It was ridiculous.
So far, yeah, that's what we're looking at. What are you thinking right now? What are you thinking right now, Thorin, on this one?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'll take the G2 angle as well. The main problem I have with this, the way the groups played out, is like when people made all these narratives, because unfortunately, people did this thing where it's like off way too small sample size. They want to know for sure why something happened and then just decide, and then they'll double down on that narrative. So what's weird is like people have taken all these super strong takes from this group, where, as Richard says, they basically didn't have the real lineup until I think it was the last two series. So at that point in time, you're not playing with your real IGL. You've only just brought the IGL in. I'm sure you've just spent the last 2 months trying to build up whatever a player style he wants and what system and all the rest. And you're bringing someone in who wasn't your previous IGL. Remember, that was Nexa. And I'm not even actually sure who did IGL on this team. Like, I heard some people speculate maybe it was Nico, because obviously classically he's done it as well. That's the one part I find weird, though, is the Nico angle. Because, right, on the one hand, if I just judge any pro player, I think it's actually perfectly fine that if your lineup's really scuffed and especially your leader taken out, you would lose the game even if you're a top team. Like, it's not like they're total chumps they're playing this group. Yeah, it's not the strongest group, but like, I think it would always have been touch and go to get out of the group without your IGL. But I do think the problem here is Nico isn't just a normal player. And so unfortunately, when you think of historically Nico teams, the one thing there's no problem with is fucking Nico fragging out. Like, the joke is, even when he was on the scuff teams, where he, whether or not he had to do it or wanted to do it, when he was the IGL, he used to frag out like a motherfucker and IGL. If anything, it was more the IGL part people maybe criticised. Like, was he doing as good a job for fit? You know, what people maybe even speculate, maybe he just calls around himself to get his own frags off. Well, the problem at the moment is, for some reason, his game has completely dropped off a cliff. And yes, there are all these extenuating circumstances. He didn't have the coach behind him in Katowice, had this mad scenario now where he doesn't have his IGL. Like, yeah, we get it. That's all tough. But something's also just sort of happened to his game individually. And I don't really know if you put the perfect G2 back together and they just get to start playing again, if that fixes itself, because it's now been quite a few matches. It's sort of like he's put together, like, I'm going to say, like 5 or 6 series in a row that have been a bit whack now. So unfortunately, that is a concern for me, because he's one of those players where I just don't even worry about him getting his game together, because he's just so consistent over the years. You just assume he's going to be fine, and it's the other parts you start looking at. So for G2 as a team, I just feel like, unfortunately, they had a chance to be the team, in my opinion, that got the early role with the new lineup. Yeah. Like, I really thought they actually, if Xtas was there and things were slightly different, I actually thought they could have won kind of 8-0. So they would be right now considered maybe like the new number one. Maybe they're going to overtake Na'Vi. But this completely saps it, because they're not going to be going further in this tournament right now. Nico's form's dropped off. So that whole cool storyline, which was an interesting one of like, wow, a rifler is going to be number one in the world again, and he's going to do it in this unique. This was all like so many positives. So like, I do think the next tournament, they could still get it all together. They could restart the momentum, etc. But these first couple of events, they've it's just been a little bit scuffed either way for me. And unfortunately for the tournament, we will later on in the tournament miss having a G2 in the playoffs or something. Like, as much, that's the other problem with these sorts of formats is like, look, love teams like Ents, love seeing up and comers come through and all the rest. Are they going to win the tournament? Probably not. So that means they're just probably going to be a slightly easier opponent in some quarterfinal for, like, I mean, pick your team, Na'Vi or someone, you know. Yeah, that's unfortunately the way these upsets tend to play out.
I'm just going
through, G2 is an aug, definitely very unlucky. I think, I don't know how their aug's the one that keeps getting hit.
I'm just going through at a glance right now. the last time Nico had this poor performance in a tournament was actually
years ago, right?
League season 13. Exact same rating, 1.8.
That was the first one where they had like the started that little mini slump for a while. Yeah.
But that's the last time that he's had this poor a performance. I mean, Blast Premier Spring Showdown, that was kind of similar as well. That was that period. But after that, he just goes right back up again and then stays up in the stratosphere until now, recently. So, yeah, I mean, it really does leave you wondering in terms of like why he is having this drop off now, when you should be thinking that this is when everything is supposed to line up and everything is supposed to click together. He doesn't have to worry about carrying. I mean, what do we make of Monacy's performance so far? Has he lived up to expectations? Last time we talked about him on Pop Flash, we all seemed pretty stoked on the idea of this guy coming into the team.
Yeah, I think he definitely has. And I don't think he's been an issue within the team. I think he had a number of series where he was top fragging. I thought he was a standout in the mouse game, and realistically, everybody tried to step up and fill the void that Nico left in that one particular series. That was definitely, I think, like the nadir of his, you know, performance in this Pro League season. But, you know, look, it's one of those things. It's like currently G2 just haven't had anything go right for them. Another narrative that's kind of like just been left by the wayside, people don't seem very interested in it, is Hunter's explosive growth and potential that he's demonstrated. And he's finally proving, you know, that he is a true world-class elite-level player, you know, easily capable of being talked about as an Electronic-esque figure to Nico, in the same way, of course, Electronic is to Simple. Now, that's all happening, and they're not able to capitalize on it because they've had this unbelievable run of luck. What I always get worried about is when I see these things happen tournament to tournament to tournament, because everyone in sports, whether they say they are or not, are suspicious on some levels. I always do get worried we're going to see like some sort of complexity level bullshit where it's like player gets COVID, coach gets COVID, IGL gets COVID the next tournament. Then someone breaks a leg and on and on it goes. And then basically the lineup breaks apart.
It's your own money death, obviously, when Esatag just joins the team and once you've got the course
Yeah, just one of the four fucking horsemen, isn't he? You know, exactly. He just rides up. That would be my worry for G2, is that Duncan's absolutely right. It was the period to come in. And now, it's cynical and kind of a fucked up thing to say. But obviously with the geopolitical situation around the world right now, there is space to occupy. Na'Vi, how's it going to affect them? You've got to think negatively, right? Gambit, or players as they're being called here at this tournament, VP, there's going to be lots of flux, lots of shuffles. We've seen that Vitality in the next group. We'll talk about them later, no doubt. They haven't hit the ground running at all. FaZe, you know, they get their lineup back and they're a little bit underwhelming again. G2 really could have had the number one team in the world spot predicated on a deep run here at this tournament, and they failed to do it through, you know, external forces. So bad omens, but people shouldn't jump to conclusions. It's not like there was anything they could really do about it.
Yeah, I would say in general, Monacy has been absolutely excellent. The only one reason I wouldn't go, like, he's not like a 10 out of 10 rookie, is just because we had Ziwu, and unfortunately Ziwu broke the meter for what a rookie can be. So if you ignore Ziwu, like, put it this way, I don't think people have thought of this yet. This guy's already better than Bit was when he joined Na'Vi. Like, that took a guy a few months to get up to speed. Monacy has just hit the ground running immediately. So the key thing is, though, for a rookie, right, the problem is this, he isn't Nico. Like, he's a really good player, and he looks like a really good opener. He actually even seems like quite clutch and good on LAN, as we see, like, so many positives. But the issue they have in their team was, as it's like Richard's saying, if you have Hunter there, who, by the way, at the moment is mega rock solid, consistent event to event, he's actually the rock you can build your team off. Monacy's actually having great performances. It wouldn't even have needed to be like number one player in the world, Nico. Literally just top 10 player would have been enough, and they probably win most of these games, and they might even be the number one team. So yeah, the tough thing at the moment is the person you thought was the stable one, Nico, with all that years of performance at this point in time, realistically, is having some sort of like mad, like fucking Dark Knight of the Soul or some shit the last month and a half. Meanwhile, actually, the other pieces are actually looking great. Like, if I was Carlos, I'd be a bit fucking underwhelmed right now, because it's like, well, I just got this guy for 600k. He's actually fucking fragging out. He's looking really good, but unfortunately, exactly the moment he's started to come along is when this other guy's cooling off a little bit. I'll also say as well, though, this is how I'll always spin it back, particularly with the structure G2 has, though. Remember, G2 did sign X-Stars from Vitality, though. And then what's funny is, I actually could have seen a world where if this team had been amazing and just won kind of eats it immediately, people might have actually just said like, oh, well, what did he do then? Because, you know, the lineups just come together. Now, if anything, he actually has his chance to show that he's done something as a coach, doesn't he? Because clearly something's amiss. He hasn't had money opportunities himself. So let's see if he can turn it around. If he does, and if he can get this team fragging out, you can see the pieces are there. That's the frustrating part for me. It's like, it's so close to actually being potentially the number one team, like Richard says. Like right now, no one even knows who Na'Vi is. Like we don't even really know who the number one is. It clearly isn't FaZe, because that FaZe team can't exist. They just have JKS. Or yeah, for me right now, if you're G2, this is the time to make it. Unfortunately, they've missed on this one.
It really does make you wonder, now that you make that point in terms of Zywu, in terms of his rookie year, and then you tie it to X-Taz, you know, is he doing it over? Does X-Taz, at least in terms of rookies,
yeah,
does he know, right? He has some kind of trick right now going that works exceedingly well because he had Zywu and now he has Monacy and there's no drop there.
And they both seem unusually comfortable, like early on. That's the crazy thing, you know. Yeah.
Monacy looked like a fish in water. It's crazy.
Meanwhile, you used to look back in the day when the old NIP foursome was there and that fifth player would be rotated in. It was like, they may as well have been wearing a fucking away jersey from Star Trek, the original series, like the fucking red outfit. Like,
you're wearing red, you're
in it. I know. Meanwhile, I wonder when they're going to cut Freiburg and that. They're just wearing like, you know, like communications officer, like, ah, oh, fuck, he's never going, is he? Ah, oh, bloody hell. Ah. Oh.
Let's beam down an away team.
Exactly, yeah. Pitt, you're first on the...
We've arrived at the scorpion planet of Gul'dar, Pitt. Set your phases to stun. I'm sure you'll be okay, you...
Yeah.
It's too good. Well, I mean, they happen to be in the same group, so, and they're going through some roster issues yet again. So we might as well just start talking about NIP. Let's dive right in. I mean,
I think you said earlier as well, even though I won't deny, putting your team name as looking for org, and especially if you actually do win maps of a top team, that is a pretty good way to get an org. But it does sound like, listen, again, guys, this is the ESL's fucking flagship product, and you're basically rocking up like, we'll play CS for food with like a fucking, like, this is supposed to be like their biggest tournament, guys. Like, yeah, he's making a bit of a mockery of it. I'm just saying, you know.
You got LF Org. You got Party Astronauts as well. I mean, yeah, you got some names out there, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, NIP.
Rich, you and I were talking about it briefly. I mean, they just had this announcement where all of a sudden Broland is like some prisoner in Azkaban or something that they're breaking out.
Yeah, weird.
What
weird
even is going on?
Yeah, oh, weird advertising.
I can't handle this. Has no one else noticed, right?
What?
They haven't just signed Device. They really are just doing, it's like they're doing they're rebooting fucking Astralis. They're even now claiming they have like a 7-man lineup. Like, you are aware, like they outlawed 6-man lineups. Like, the Valve said you're not allowed to use them. Like, the lie doesn't even work anymore. Like, it can't even possibly. So I don't even know what's going on. Because people are like believing it, like, oh, maybe they are offering a certain, like, what are you talking about? 7 players.
Yeah, me and Sam were just talking about that.
Real quick. Just before we get into it, guys, be sure to let us know what you guys think in the comments section below. And be sure to follow and subscribe to the channel as well. Give us a like, but leave some comments. I mean, what are NIP doing? What's going on with NIP?
Some comment. Like, first of all, there was two things that are interesting. One is that good old Hicham Chaheen, the like CEO. I think he's the CEO, right?
Yeah.
If not, he's the owner, then whatever. Yeah, one of those big roles. Basically, he made a tweet right when they signed Brolin that was sort of like, oh, great, awesome, can't wait to see Devitt when he's back. And then loads of people were linking like, oh, wow, Devitt's coming back. And so he's deleted that tweet, don't worry. Like, so that already makes you think like, what the fuck? That, because that implies that like maybe he's not coming back. And then the other thing is that there's that weird comment by Jonas Gunderson, aka fucking one of these things is not like the other fucking Jonas Gunderson, the COO of the NIP. He's the one who, for some fucked up reason, this is why they're also doing an Astralis reboot similar. They tried to do that thing where it's like they say something that cannot possibly be true, but they implied it. So his implication was like, no one is being removed, though. It's like, I can only have 5 in the server at any one time. No, but everyone will be included. Oh, it doesn't work. Doesn't make sense, does it? So the weird thing is, it actually, his statement about it would imply like it was a real 7-man roster and it sort of everyone could get a spot. Whereas as far as we can tell, like surely at least one player is just benched for the contract reasons and will never play again. And then one player, it depends if device comes back, right? So I can't tell entirely on this one because I don't have any behind the scenes info. Is this some sort of fucked up work and this is all a big distraction? Are they just really so, are they essentially just lying and say, we have got a five-man lineup, we're just going to pretend the others are in the team to try and sell them or something? Like, what's your take on this, Rich?
Yeah, so we were talking about it, me and Semler, just before you rocked up, and basically what our take on it is just that you have to say it's a six-man lineup, right? There's absolutely no practical reason. There is absolutely no practical application for that. They've got an academy side. They've got a successful academy side. They've been cycling in academy players from the academy side over and over again, anytime they've needed one for any emergency or any holidays or even shit just to try it out for shits and giggles. And they've been doing that for a year. So what do you mean six-man roster? You have essentially, you have a 10-man pool of players to draw from already. Why do you need an 11th? What, you started a fucking football team? What you on about? So what they mean is they can't fucking sell him. That's what they're saying. The person who is going to be surplus to requirements cannot be sold for, in any feasible way. Because A, who's buying right now? B, it's probably going to be, what's his fucking Fozzie. Face? Yeah. No, he's going back.
Fozzie for device, device comes back.
Yeah, let's assume device is coming back despite that deleted tweet. I have to believe device is coming back to NIP. I can't believe the biggest transfer move of like
last
year.
Would be wild, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Was for nothing. I can't believe that. So it's going to be, I always get them mixed up, because Plopsky.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I was getting mixed up with Pep because they're both just really stupid meme names. So, but anyway, yeah. So it's, you know, it's not going to be Essetag. They just signed him. So Plopsky's the guy that will be the sixth man. Who's buying Plopsky? Come on. Hands up, anyone? Nah, fuck that. So
it's metal in it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you say we've got a six man roster. Also, as well, one thing that esports teams just love to endlessly circle jerk about is how they got like this money ball mindset, you know, and we're all coaches and we can all, you know, we're gonna swap him and here's our sports scientist to tell us what seat to sit on the bus. They can't help themselves. They want to be like real sports when in reality they don't even, that, you know, if you want to be like real sports, step one, understand the fucking sport, mate. I mean, start with that, right? You don't. So, you know, if you don't, how can you even make the right hires? So, yeah, it's a lot of it is just flexing, making it look like it's a much more advanced sports entity than it actually is. So, look, will it be a six-man roster? No, only in the sense if someone wants some time off and they need to bring this player in, or if somebody fucks up and gets dropped and they think, well, time to bring him Plopsky back.
Real quick, I mean, do you think that they care so much about what the community has to say, or they care about, I mean, because NIP are bringing in big time investors, right?
Yeah. So it's like a business
all
perception.
About flexing just online to try and put the best look like you're putting the best.
Yeah, it's the strongest move, isn't it? It's just a PR. You spin the PR angle. Look, yeah.
Is good. This is all PR. We don't care what the community has to say. You know, we don't care about what the pundits have to say. We just need to make sure that the people pumping money into our, I was going to say scheme, but our organization, you know, they keep pumping money in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look. It's just all optics culture. And I think we should know by now, if there's one organization, right, if we're talking about the most bullshit spreading, or like, as in, you know, slurry just flying out the back of them like a tractor on a farm, right? Like, Astralis obviously take the fucking crown. I mean, like, fair play. You spray shit at a distance. Not many orgs do. Well done, sir. Well done, Nicola Nile. But then it's NIP for me. Right? Think about all of the shit they talked. Yeah. The nonsense when they signed device, the recurring sound bites. It's like signing Cristiano Ronaldo, send tweet. All of the ridiculous presence they have on social media, having to claim that they had something to do with the major going to Sweden, needlessly attacking the talent announcement just so they could insert themselves into that. Still notice they don't have any women's teams in any of the major.
They're shameless. They're just,
why do they hate shameless. Women? That's what I want to know. When's that question going to get answered? So look, they are an org that is all artifice. It is all style over substance. The difference now, that roster, that five, that is fucking substance. That is a new anomaly in the top three, top five.
If Device comes back, right?
Exactly.
I agree. Exactly. If Device comes back, here's the sad thing. I get the vibe where it's like, this is why if you set a narrative in place, I should know this is what my whole career has been about, like how you tell the story, how you pick up a thread of a person's career narrative and tie it to the team, to the next thing. The problem is this. Once a narrative is set, it's like, I would say it's harder to change the narrative than it is to set it in the first place. I mean, you see this in news media. It's basically the entire premise of how war propaganda works and people don't get it. The first piece that gets to you is so powerful that now something totally insane has to happen to make the change from what you first saw. So similarly, here's the problem NIP has is, unfortunately, they've sort of burned into everyone's brain that NIP with Device is the shit you saw last year with LNZ. And so in your brain, you just think, well, even if he comes back, does it really matter? You know, wouldn't it just be like the seventh best team? But actually, then you realise, wait a minute, you see the team when they didn't have Device in, they were way more competitive than they should have been. They brought in a new coach who actually seems to be doing a good job with the team. Yes. He's never bloody had Device. Then you look, they're signing Brolin. By the way, even when Fnatic had the odd tough time, Brolin was pretty much always good. It was only when Alex first joined, maybe there was like a role conflict that he was slightly off. So these, like, if you bring Device back now, there's no LNZ, you took out Plopsky, who seemed to be the person who got lost in the mix when you had Device and Rez, etc. in the same team, and you're bringing in this young guy who's going to be a fragger. Like, actually, yeah, I agree with Richard. This is like the sleeper team that, think about what we were describing now with G2, where they're all like, suddenly the elite of the scene has sort of like parted ways, and you could just get in there if you got the right team. If they had Device tomorrow and he's been playing, he hasn't just literally not touched the game for 3 months, I agree. They'd be a candidate to just run right into the top five potentially.
Yeah. And obviously won the group here, which is, you know, why we're talking about them.
They make round of eight now.
Yeah, they only dropped one match.
And that was G2 at the end when it was pretty much already decided. So
yeah, exactly.
I mean, again, I guess I was waiting for that because that's kind of like the moment, I suppose, for Thorin to wax lyrical on round robin formats again. You know, teams playing matches that don't necessarily.
That's the other part, isn't it? Because here's the other thing that sucks about the format is, one, you end up with scenarios like, I'll just preview what happened in Group B if people don't know. In Group B, you had the utterly ridiculous premise where, because FaZe Clan has beaten Vitality, they now need Vitality to do them a favour, and in a match that Vitality cannot qualify to the playoffs from, play amazingly and beat one of the best teams in the world in the XVP lineup, right? That is a stupid scenario to be in. There's even a world, by the way, where that now even means, in theory, if you're FaZe, you should like never trash talk Vitality in the game, for example, because the last thing you want to do is piss them off and make them think, why not just forward in the last game? And obviously it goes without saying, even if nothing happens, it sucks if you're FaZe Clan and you're like, so I need this team to actually play amazing game when they don't actually have to try at all and the best group's over. So like, anytime you're in that scenario, I'm not a big fan. And then obviously, just an aside, you hope it's not the case, but it's fucking Counter-Strike. You can just fix matches doing that as well. You can also just like determine for whatever reason if you win, lose that game, if someone gets it out of the group in first, second or third. Like, it gives too much power, in my opinion, to teams that actually aren't in the tournament anymore, which I'm never really a big fan of, you know.
That is perhaps a good segue to start touching on Group B here, because there's just so much to go on. Ents coming out of nowhere, shocking everybody and just swinging for the fences right out the gates, nearly topping the group. Furia topping the group, a group that has Vitality, that has Outsiders, aka Virtus Pro, in it. I mean, these are already just huge results coming into it. So, I mean, I suppose we can just start right there. Well, actually, I was going to think maybe we should start with FaZe Clan to kick it off, just because there was so much focus on that team coming into this group and they just barely squeak by in that exact scenario that you just described. So, I mean, what's going on with FaZe right now, Richard? What are you thinking about this team?
Yeah, I mean, look, so again, the community hop on the lazy narrative, like no JKS, no win. Rain has come back and he is bad. Carrigan cannot aim. He is too old and washed. It's like they just won the biggest tournament of the year like a couple of weeks ago.
It was
like
2 weeks ago, yeah. No.
Yeah, like, I don't know, man. Like, I like to use this thing called memory every now and then. Like, it's fading as I get older, sure. Yeah, I am fully Biden these days, but still, like, every now and then, it's okay. Just look it up. Just look up what happened last week and go, oh, yeah, it did. That was real. But yeah, I mean, look, in this group, you know, we had them as one of the favorites for the tournaments last time we did an episode, you know, I think rightly so. In this group, they just got off to a bad start in that Ents game, which realistically, You know, they should have won that series for me. I feel there was a number of instances, and yes, some of them didn't involve Carrigan, where it just didn't quite go for them. But they beat Entz on Entz's map pick to start the series out, and then they got battered on Dust too, which, you know, which was their pick. And you think, well, FaZe, especially the form they're in at the moment, the players they've got, you expect them to dumpster a team like Entz on a map like that if you just go head-to-head, aim for aim, skill for skill. But yeah, Entz have been the surprise team of the group. So FaZe get off to that bad start. And then where do you go from there? Well, you know, they lost to Outsiders, the VP team. I mean, we'll probably throw in a mention about this. I think this team's breaking up. I think Outsiders are going to split up. I don't know if they're going to survive all of this external pressure. And there were some weird moments and, you know, things going on in the games where it just looked like even communication had perhaps broken down a little bit. But, you know, that to me is the type of, they're the gatekeeper team. And again, FaZe, you know, lost their map pick and they go on to Dust 2, which, fair enough, you know, Outsiders are pretty brave playing FaZe on that, but probably didn't feel too intimidated based on what had happened in the past. That was a blockbuster. That was 22-18. So now you're 2-0'd. And fortunately, FaZe get to play Sprout.
Yeah.
So, okay, good. They were the group's whipping boys. It all came down to having to beat Vitality, and man, they did. But Vitality have been absolutely woeful. One thing I'll definitely feel a little bit smug about is I said I didn't think this project was going to click straight away. I said the language barriers that they were having to conquer and everything was going to, and the coaching styles they were trying to bet in, it was going to make Vitality have some problems. So FaZe, yes, beat them handily. And then, as we said, were reliant to squeak through on favors to squeak through the group. But overall, I still think, you know, the narratives around FaZe are lazy. I think they're really good value for number two in the world. I think even though it's going to be a tough run for them with the third place finish, don't bet against them to not like go like semis, you know, go like maybe even make it to a final. It'll be tough, but I think they can beat any team left in this tournament still with the squad they've got.
Yeah, for me, I think people definitely overreacted on the FaZe storyline. Part of it is, like Richard says, unfortunately, they've taken the high of like JKS and the great sort of one-off storyline. And the problem is they don't want to let that high go. They want to just like, what they really hope is if they just say enough times Rain sucks and that FaZe really does just sign JKS and then they get their little sick fantasy run back of the fucking final or something. Even though, by the way, like... The premise goes, in theory, he's supposed to be saying JKS instead of Rops if you really want him to join, because that was the whole reason why they even brought him in the first place, because Twist thought he was a one-for-one for the role. So it's for so unlikely it's going to happen. So in my opinion, you're just spinning your wheels if you waste your time on that one. So to me, I agree with Richard. I think if you look at FaZe Clan right now, consider there aren't really many really strong teams right now in World CS. I think FaZe Clan looks fabulous overall. Yeah, they've had the odd series that went down, but I would even say this, as much as people tunnel on the whole Carrigan issue, because at the moment, not only are his numbers pretty bad, but you see how he plays like the most selfless style of like IGL entry you'll ever fucking see. Now here's the thing though, they still win games even when he does that. Like, actually, if you watch that game against Vitality, he was shit in that one too. Doesn't matter. Yeah. They just thrashed him. So, to me, like, he's just got a good enough team now where that will now work. That was the problem I had was, I had my concerns last year when he did that, because he was doing that, and then he had, like, Olofmeister. It's like, Olofmeister's also going to tank the game. And so then, God forbid, Rain ever has a bad map, because suddenly 3 out of 5, you got no firepower. In this team, their trio that does it by committee, really does it by committee. You know 2 out of the 3 of fucking Twists, Brokey, and Rops to turn up. If not at the moment, maybe all three. Like, actually, the rest of the team looks like they're really settling into their roles. So to me, the fact that they did still escape the group, that they did still beat Vitality, sure, Vitality, like I said, had to do them a favour and beat the Outsiders, the XVP, but they did get out the group. And in these formats, that is all that matters, is survival. It doesn't even matter where you come, 1, 2, or 3. If you're a team like FaZe, by the way, you're going to win the tournament anyway, aren't you? So your scenario is, I can beat everyone in the playoffs. So now that you've made it out, it's all fine. If I were them, when you consider they also had their whole shit last week that was a bit scoffed, it kind of eats here with the whole stand-ins and all that jazz. If I were them, I'd be perfectly fine with where I am. Yeah, it's not ideal. Yeah, you'd like to stomp everyone, but who fucking cares at the end of the day? And I've seen enough overall of these series. I also agree. I think there's something to FaZe Clan. Like, I don't think it was a one-off to win Katowice like that. I don't know if they're the number one team, but I think they're very good. Seem to have a very good map pool as well. There's loads going for this team.
It's a question of whether or not Kerrigan's going to be able to continue to stay one step ahead of everybody, right? Isn't that the question? You know, like, you win a tournament, then you've got the giant target on your back at that point, and everybody and their grandmother's going to be watching, trying to figure out how to beat you. So, but does Kerrigan have a good enough track record in the past handling this sort of pressure and staying one step ahead? Or do you think this is where he can trip up and the individual performance can come back to haunt him?
The thing that's been Kerrigan's undoing historically has never been failure to keep up with the teams around him. It's always come internally. It's always been, you know, he's great at getting players to buy into his system. He's very good at having quick turnaround on players who are in slumps. He's very good at pulling players out of slumps, notoriously does it. He's very good at developing young talent or getting value out of, let's say, underappreciated, unknown talent. But the problem with having all of that as a skill set is it invites committee thinking and that everyone has an equal vote. And that's not a good position to be in if you're an IGL, because one day maybe your strats aren't working or you're not playing particularly well or you've got a different idea about what the map pool should be. And you go to bed thinking everything's fine and you wake up the next day and you're getting fucking iced and here's Mr. Glaive, you know, like, that's just how it goes. And it's always been like that for Kerrigan. But yeah, I don't think the problem's going to be what teams are doing around him. In fact, actually, I think a no better IGL to take advantage of the stumbles from the likes of G2 and Vitality and VP and Na'Vi. I think Kerrigan will actually, I like, put it this way, I think we'll see FaZe with the number one HLTV world ranking crown. Probably by the end of this tournament, if not after the next one they play.
That's pretty fair.
Yeah.
Terrific to hear that as well, considering the story coming out of the end of last year going into this year, when they finally get all of the pieces together. I mean, pretty much all of us are saying, like, they need to win a massive tournament within the next 3 to 6 months or this project is a failure and you might as well, you know, just trash it and start over. And sure enough, they didn't waste any time. They went right into Katowice and take the world by storm. So this is really starting to back up, at least to the speculation that we had at the end of last year going into this one, that FaZe, perhaps this is the winning combination. So it's very cool to see. So now, actually, I want to go to a team that's actually having a few more issues. And Richard, you briefly mentioned them earlier, saying that you weren't a big fan. I've said it several times in the past as well, where I feel like cultural differences are also going to be a huge factor in getting the team to mesh. But Vitality right now, I mean, do we feel like they're living up to expectations, or are they underperforming, overperforming? Like, what are we thinking about Vitality right now? And let's start with you this time, Thorne. What do you think about Vitality?
The main problem I have is this. When I look at the names on paper, I wouldn't give up on this lineup at all. Like, there's still so much you could do. There's so many, like, there's only even small tweaks. Like, obviously, if Siwu gets a bit more comfortable, there's so many tiny things I could see happening that could make the team go from where they are now, which is unfortunate and also ran, to the team you see glimpses of, like the Outsiders match. Like, wow, maybe they could be a really good team. So, look, I still do think they could be good. But at the moment, it looks like a long-term project, unfortunately. It looks like it's not going to be tomorrow is the issue I have. And then when I start trying to speculate and put pieces together, this is where I actually think we're in one of the weirdest places I've ever seen in team construction. Because typically, if you keep three players, which just for terminology we would call the core, even though really like core should probably mean like the people who made up the style of play. But let's just say that the three that they kept, so obviously they kept Zibu, Apex and Masuta from Vitality. Normally when you have a core and you bring other people in, you try to like retain what the core had and what worked about it and then add in the strengths of the other people and upgrade your team. Because they've brought in a coach who comes with the two that are added to the core, it actually feels like they've gone the other way. And actually, if anything, Sonic's coming and he's doing his shit and he's got Magus and Dupree and he's getting them in place. And if you see, like, Dupree's sort of gotten his game together, Magus is working himself back in. And it seems to me, actually, as if it's the French players who are a bit lost. Because when I watch Vitality play, like, first of all, everyone knows it, but Zibu's numbers, look, for a normal, really good player, they're still fucking good. But, like, for Zibu, they're actually terrible because Zibu used to be a supernatural stats player who would always put up monster numbers. So for him, he's in a slump, which is again uncharacteristic, has happened in the past, but I wouldn't say even that happened as long. It was more like he'd have the one series that he did badly, but maybe they got eliminated, so it was in everyone's mind. Actually, he's had a few that have been ropey. And then the other thing for me is, like, stylistically, I think that's the area right now I think they're in a fucking world of hurt, is identity wise I don't get the vibe that Apex and Zonic have the same vision about the game at all right now, because Apex looks like he's trying to make like super super decisive, like gamble calls, like aggressive moves. And then the rest of them look like, dude, where Astralis? Like the Astralis style is that, you know, you sort of like take all the info in from the map, you make all these like slow reads. Like, so it feels to me at the moment they're just totally off pacing wise, identity wise, style wise. So at the moment, I would imagine it's about Zonic figuring out what the French players want. So it's not, I don't think actually individually, I don't look at a certain player beyond the Zebu, like slight underperforming. I don't look at a single player and go, hey, he's bad or he can't be in the line. I just look at the team right now and I just go, this isn't a team, it's individuals at the moment for me. So it's just been underwhelming in terms of like, I do think there is real potential this could be one of the best lineups, but it isn't right now. It really isn't.
Yeah, and look, you know, it shows how little time you get these things. They've only played 26 maps together, right? It is going to take some time. But the problem is the names involved, the money involved, the hype that was generated. You know, remember when this story broke at the major guys? It was a pretty big fucking talking point, wasn't it? Nearly made us forget all the production issues, didn't it? So, you know, it was that team. I said it to Duncan many times on By the Numbers. I said, this has got to succeed. It's got to work. It's too much, too many reputations. But the sad reality was that Vitality team that they broke apart to have this was winning tournaments. It was like certainly the third best team in the world. Arguably, you know,
second. Maybe number two, yeah.
Yeah. And they ended the year on a high, and Apex was crying, going, I wish we weren't going to break up. It's like, you're doing it. You know, yeah, I've got some agency in this matter.
How much agency do you think Apex has, or is it the Vitality CEO? Interview, he was saying that he. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the French players, of course, they have agency, mate. This is just what they do. They things don't go 100% perfect. They start backbiting, bitching. It's always fractious. There's always, you know, factions within the French camp, and they want to, you know, try out new things because they want to win. And it always comes down to some sort of flamboyant argument about styles. And, you know, it's been that way since time immemorial. For as long as I've followed Counter-Strike, mate, the French scene has done this thing where typically when a team, it's inconceivable that you would break a team apart when they're succeeding, but sometimes it's not quite enough for them and they think they can go to that next level and let's bring back Shocks or let's get Kenny S. You know, they just do stuff like this. This time it's with Danish players, and my worry was, what would it do to what would Zonic's coaching style do to Apex's leadership? Keep in mind, by the way, he's got his boy Majisk waiting in the wings.
That's an interesting little shaded in detail, isn't it? If you're Apex,
right? Like, keep in mind, Majisk said he wants to be an IGL. Keep in mind, Majisk even intimated he still wanted to be an IGL when Glaive came back from paternity leave back when he was on Astralis. So Majisk fancies himself as an IGL. I reckon Danny fancies Majisk as a future IGL as well. Apex could be on borrowed time as an IGL. Then on top of that, we all know Ziwu is a wonderful, unique character in the terms that he's a star player without any star ego whatsoever. He's very shy. He's very unassuming. We know he can speak English and is learning English, but still is very reserved in how much media work he does. And I'm just wondering, you know, if the extra requirement to communicate in a language he's maybe not particularly familiar with, maybe it's hurting his game somehow. The stats do speak for themselves. I mean, the last two events he's been at has been a 1.10 rating, which, by the way, is still fucking good. But his events prior to that were 1.39, 1.35, 1.27, 1.36, 1.30, 1.37. You know, so something ain't right. Something ain't right for him. And honestly, egos and vanity aside, that's the first nut you crack. Absolutely. I know I can't tell Zonic out a fucking coach. I would never dream about it. But whatever he's doing, find a system that enables Ziwu and you are like fucking 7/8 of the way, you know, to having the number one team in the world, frankly. Because the rest of the roster, you look at the stats, they're doing okay.
Absolutely.
It's just Dupree. Is that a renaissance out of fucking nowhere? Majisk is made. It's like, I don't, the mad part is I don't understand how they're failing quite this bad. It really is weird. It really is.
By the way, I'll even go one further. What's wild is Sonic has somehow walked out of like the greatest coaching job ever, the Astralis thing. Could have gone anywhere in the world, written his own ticket, has in fact, to go to Vitality with these players. And this is the only scenario I could even concoct where he might actually get fired if this doesn't work out. Because I tell you what, the one thing if you're Vitality you will not tolerate is if Ziwu never returns to elite form. Because that was the whole foundation of the project. Like, that is your team essentially. Like, people know this. He's got a contract that lasts like it's at least 3 more years. It might even still be 4. It was originally like a 5-year extension or something crazy. So like he is their team for the next years going forward. So I'm sorry, even if you're Zonic, like you ain't number one on that pecking order in terms of like, who has to get taken care of. So I agree with Richard, even though on paper, like you look how mega he's been, you think he's going to surely just turn it around soon. I would probably expect he does. The fact that this is coming at the same time as you're trying to change the whole culture of the team, different style of team, as we say here, maybe they have a different vision of how the leaders should work in the team. It's like, it's a very, put it this way, it's a worrying symptom to me, the Ziwu issue.
Yeah, for sure.
It does leave you worried. It does leave you wondering what is going on. Culture, I think culture is still going to be the big thing, but you know, going into it, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on them, what their next tournament is looking like.
It's definitely an aspect to that as well, sure. Yeah. I mean,
Oh, that was always going
to
be it.
I want to ask about this actually, Semler, because you should actually know better than most people. If people don't know, Semler like is absolutely fluent in French and could go with French people and talk to me. He could talk to Swedish people in Swedish, and obviously he's from America, right? I think that's the most underrated aspect, because obviously famously it happened in some of the Swedish teams over the years. Even the Fnatic recently, based on my sources, basically I was told internally, some people did just find Smuja annoying. It's not even necessarily that he was toxic. They just found him annoying and didn't want to play with him. Now, to people in other countries, by the way, like the Jokers, if you know the old Virtus Pro guys, they'd be like, so you are a good team, but he slightly annoy you. Like, that's just their everyday life, isn't it? They'd be like, what's the problem? Yeah. Like, that's a teammate. But certain people, in this case the Swedes, they have a different sense of what's comfortable for them, how they want like their team atmosphere to be. So I think people actually have that's the one area we all maybe would just assume because Zonic's so great he'd overcome. Like, he is taking Danish team culture and French team culture. By the way, I don't know if you could get more polar different within Europe. That's, and you're trying to just crush them together. It's not even like you're taking one player and saying just integrate. You're taking like halves of teams and just bash them together. Yeah. That's actually, and as we're seeing now, maybe a way bigger task than we realise. It's like I always say about Carrigan. The problem I have with the Carrigan narrative is this. People act as though, even if he'd won that major, it'd be like, yeah, but Glaive's got 3 more than you. No, that's not the way it works. Because guess what? One major to Carrigan in a fully international team where everyone speaks their second language is worth way more than 2 majors for an all Danish team for me. Like, it's a different scale of feat. So similarly, though, I think Zonic's facing perhaps the hardest task of any coach ever. And as Richard says, the expectation is even be good. It's basically be number one. If you're like number 5, you probably failed.
Considering the firepower on the team, I mean, this was the speculation. I mean, Danes kind of, I mean, they're on the mainland. They're a little bit more fiery in terms of Scandinavians, right? A little bit more out there. So I thought perhaps there was a chance that, you know, you could have the melding together of the French, really fiery French side of things, and then the Danes, right? Because if it was with Swedes or Norwegians, then I'd have been a little bit more reticent about the whole project. I was thinking maybe there's a chance because it's Danes. But even then, still, it's such a huge gap. It feels to me like going into it, that was always going to be, to me, the big issue was how do you get a fiery Apex with, you know, to mesh with the Astralis guys? I always saw that as a roadblock, and I always wondered how they were going to get around it. And, well, it seems like they've still got work ahead of them.
I don't think people realize as well, though, Semler, like, right, so first of all, that Apex thing, it's not like something he's just doing so you can fucking have a GIF. Or a GIF.
Yeah. Or
on Reddit.
To the camera, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like he's not playing up to it. That's literally who he is in that moment. And I'm telling you, that is not how Astralis do things, or it certainly wasn't. So, I mean,
himself recently, I mean, taking a little bit of a turn here, but like Brolin himself, didn't that come out that with the whole Fnatic thing, Brolin just wasn't interested in international, like he was not liking the direction of going in an international team and he wanted to play with Swedes.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be nipping that whole thing in the bud right there, where it's just like, no, I would rather play with, you know, a team that I'm comfortable with right there. And speak Swedish and go from there at least, right? I would totally understand that. This is where it gets really interesting with all the teams going international, right? That's just always been a thing. But speaking of a different nationality that's actually been doing some pretty good work and took the group by storm, I figure this is we need to spend a little bit of time talking about them. But the Brazilians, Furia, topping the group, 4-1 record. Yeah. Terrific work from them. It feels like it's a long time coming.
Dude, this is how you know that the roster moves. I don't think people still fully take, like, scope. That was the craziest roster mania, I think, ever. Like, because almost every single top 10 team that wasn't basically Na'Vi or, remember, even teams like VP had made their roster moves. Basically, if you weren't Na'Vi and Gambit, everyone just made roster moves because everyone was trying to get the firepower to have a chance against Na'Vi because everyone knows at that major, it just felt like this is, even though it turned out G2 had a good game against them in the final, everyone else was just sort of, this is just pointless, isn't it? Like, if they just play well, they'll win. Like, that's so rare in Counter-Strike. Everyone basically did an arms race and upgraded the rosters. But yeah. This is the roster that somehow went under the wire. Because in the same way as the FaZe Clan change and the VP changes were just easy moves because they were upgrades on paper and you're only integrating one player. So in theory, they're the easiest moves. People really overlooked this Furia move. Does everyone forget? Furia was good last year. Look, they weren't a world beater. They weren't going to win the major. But you saw, like, they were a quality side. They definitely had star players. Like, there's a reason those two players were in the top 20, etc. So you look at it, they added the most obvious upgrade in Brazilian Counter-Strike, Safe, to be their AWP. It hasn't even, by the way, even worked out that well. He's not carrying. He hasn't had many big pop-offs. But it doesn't matter because he's just better than their past AWPers. And the other players haven't been affected at all and seemingly still just frag out. So actually, Furia is sort of like the... For me, I don't think they're going to be like a world beater, like I say, but I think they're going to be another strong dark horse team. And you saw, if a group like this ever happens, that the other teams are under out of form, have any, they're going to seize on it. Because I actually think this is a... It looks like it could even be a fairly consistent team. I think it's a pretty quality side. Firepower is very legit. And as I say, if Safe ever comes to play, by the way, now we can start cooking with gas. That's when maybe they can be like a team that could win an event or... make a big final or something, but I'll wait until that happens before I put that on them. Though I think they're very good, though.
I want to add. I was very impressed with Safe's resilience because he started out pretty, you know. I don't want to say slow in the group, but you know it was okay. He had like a pretty good map against outsiders. Obviously, you'd expect him to do well against Sprout. No big deal. Where he impressed me is he had this map against Ents. They won that series, but they lost the first map, I believe. And he got 5 kills. Really rough. 5 for 25. And obviously, HLTV, every thread. Safe. Come here. Furia fans, come here. Safe. Everyone was saying he was bad. Everyone was saying it was a terrible move. He's 27. He's an old man. He's a boomer.
They're doing what they do to us. 27-year-old man.
27-year-old man. Exactly. And then in the next map, he dropped 28. He went 28 for 14, 1.69 rating. And then obviously got 18 in the map after that and did really well. And remember, by the way, he was the top fragger in the FaZe series, which they lost, which didn't really matter. So maybe it's a little bit of pressure and just getting used to playing at this level because he's been farming tier two for, you know, months and months and months. But for me, I think you hit the nail on the head, Duncan. It doesn't even matter. Realistically, if he can get to those types of games where he's dropping 29 kills against FaZe or whatever, brilliant, right? You know, absolutely fantastic. Now we can talk about Furia in that global equation, but he doesn't even have to. He is just better than all the options they've had ever since Henny did his thing again, which he's doing again, with God's sake.
I mean, he was just sent to fucking destroy teams, wasn't he? But what's mad is he does it from internally. He joins. He's like some fucking, like, one of those, like, mad SJWHR people. It's like he joins and then he just brings in his mate. And it's like, at that point, the orgs just get taken over from inside out. And he, like, cordyceps these motherfuckers.
Yeah. So, the Furia are up there. Furia are up there and they looked really, really good. Especially consider, I mean, you know, it's still a relatively new move. There was no guarantee it would click. Fantastic performance for them atop the group. I certainly didn't predict that.
I'm so triggered just thinking about that Henny move now. Because it's the way he always, like, joins. And then he's like, it's always going well.
This
and then he's
team's
like,
pretty good, but wouldn't it be better if my brother was here? Like,
it's just just can't quit you. Identical twin of mine. Like, oh, fucking hell, why? And I've also told them a million times, Summer, but they won't listen to me. At least get some fucking hijinks going where you pretend to be each other. Can we not at least get that for one time? I think it'd just be funny at least. Like, I've always said you play so differently as well. It'd be the ultimate mind game, wouldn't it? And then everyone's going to go, how ignorant, Thor, they have different tattoos. Then, yeah, a fucking felt tip pen. You can buy those 2 week tattoos to come off. That's 200 IQ. Even your own teammates will think it's him. That's fucking 700 IQ. I don't know why I'm giving them any IQ points on this. Whatever. All I'm going to say is I'm not a fan of the Henny comes in and then Henny goes, like, it's like the second he joins, you just know, like, fucking.
Oh, the timer has started for when exactly. Lucas is
turn the hourglass and the hour grains of sand. Like, no, bloody hell.
It's 100%. It was the attack, is he? Yeah, as sure as Nico will one day be the IGL of G2. 100%. I believe it.
You know what? The other angle is, to be fair, if you know the Brazilian players, they do always somehow have their families involved publicly. I just imagine they must have that scenario when you're a kid and they go, come on, take your brother with you. Oh, I'm going to see my friends and that. Like, just take him with you. Or, like, let him hang along. Like, oh, come on then. Just don't fucking say anything stupid, though. My friends and that. It's like, I could be a support player. Oh, you fucking... I'm never bringing you and me ever again. I'll tell you what, next time, I promise, you're not coming with me. The mum's like, take him along, fucking hell. What if there was a third one? That would be the most... That would be next ever if there was a third twin. What the hell? Whose music is that? Just another one comes out. There's a third one? Holy shit, like...
Everything always has to come back to the WWE.
Of course.
Yeah, that's the thing. How do you know that there isn't an extra one? And he's like, and that's why Henny has like these mad dips in form or whatever. And it's like the prestige. Exactly.
It's the prestige.
Yeah. So anyway.
Next level, yeah, the amount of commitment. You don't know about.
Enough.
Getting your hands dirty. You don't know about that.
Enough about
the third brother who played CSGO had to play a major final. He lost it, but we still let him play.
And by the way, a third twin, of course, is a triplet. We know that. We do know that.
Do we want to talk? Do we want to take a glance at Group C and D real quick, just to see like, is there anything in particular?
I'm down for that.
I mean, by the way, let's be real. Group C, look, as much as the first two have been scoffed as fuck, Group C looks messy as hell. Like, if this isn't prime for upsets all over the place, so like I'm not joking. I expect, as long as they haven't been too severely affected by you know what, I expect Gambit somehow will get through. Like, they are just a pretty quality side overall. Aside from that, I'm not joking, I could see almost any other combo of teams coming out of this group. I think it's going to be really wild because you've got teams from all different locations. Oh, this is going to be a bloodbath, I think. I think it's going to be really messy.
Yeah, like Liquid being kind of seeded as high as they are. A lot of people think Liquid are going to get through this group. I don't think that's guaranteed at all. Yeah, no chance. In fact, you know, they're taking on Big. Is their, you know, first game in the group. Well, that's the last thing you want if you're Liquid. So, and I think Big will I got a good feeling Big might just win that one.
They're safe to sort of sneak through this group, maybe second or third.
Yeah, I think so. So... yeah, you've got some issues, man. It's like godsend as well. Yes, they've just added Henny in time to play in this group, and Phelps is the player that made way, which was a surprise to me who it was. But I still think godsend overall. I know they've had a bit of a wobble at the last couple of tournaments. I still think they're one of the most improved teams overall in World Counter-Strike, from where they started with the Tackle Project to where they are now. Remember, they had to come the long way to even be in Pro League. True. So they've got that tenacity. And, you know, listen, that Godsent team, they can beat Movistar Riders. They can beat Party Astronauts. Question then becomes, can they beat Liquid? Well, if you do that and you get three wins, you're pretty much set. So, you know, so the other groups have been close because of quality, right? Or theoretical quality. This group is close because of a lack of quality in a way. You expect players to just win all their games. Who knows, though, current situation might be, you know, distracting. But anyone else can beat anyone else.
Yeah, just for clarification,
with the exception of Party Astronauts.
Just for clarification, players is the ex-Gambit team. That's just the name they're using in case people get lost.
Yeah, look, it's going to get a bit first and all that shit, isn't it, if we have to do this. Why did they call themselves that?
It is a whack name, I will say.
Yeah, just anything but that.
Right, here's what I think when I look at this group. right? Knowing the way, because as I've said before with this format, like people almost never play 10 out of 10 CS every single game. Teams have, like, the underdog teams tend to win at the end of it, doesn't matter. The big teams tend to lose early. Here's the defining factor, I think, of who gets out of this group. I think one of the teams that you expect, so players, big team, Liquid, these are the teams on paper that's supposed to get the top three spots. Whichever one of them loses, and I think, get ready for the prediction, mark it down, one of them will get upset by Movistar Riders and they will not get through. Because if you look at the way these groups play out, like, that's exactly the sort of team, just like here's the difference. I don't think Party Esports is good enough to do the upset. Movistar Riders, if you actually look past them, that is the team that maybe could have like a little pop off from a player or two. They're not a terrible team. They've got some half decent firepower. People saw when they used to have Smuya, they can win games against people. That's the team where it's like, again, if you're like a Team Liquid, you might even win a game against one of the other squads. You might be almost through. That's the banana peel that if you step upon, you will be the one that is unceremoniously tossed out of the tournament, unfortunately. Because that's also another factor that people always forget about round robin, is it also depends. Like, you have those games where in your mind it's like, right, well, we're going to beat them, but then it's if we can beat Gambit. And that's the time where suddenly you don't beat that team, and then now the Gambit game's life or death. It's not even just like first or second. It's just you're out the whole tournament if you don't win like the even harder team, you know.
That's the truth. And what about Group D real quick before we sign off? Anything standing out for you guys here predictions-wise that you're looking at?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's a couple of things like Na'Vi's ongoing situation, obviously, first and foremost. Still
even play? That's what I was wondering about. Like, how is that going to work?
Well, they're still in Poland.
Right, so no one's gone. Did the Russian players not go back to Russia?
Nobody went home, apparently, with the exception of the management. Two members of the management returned to Kiev, I believe. So that's the first question. What Na'Vi's going to turn up? Obviously, mentally, they're going to be feeling really despondent right now. And you know, sometimes that can galvanize a team historically in sports when you feel like you've got nothing else but the game.
Sure.
Can be a good vector to kind of like, you know, try and forget about you know, the issues you're going through. Other times it can be an unwelcome distraction while bigger things are going on around you. So that's a huge X factor in the group, obviously. Heroic in there, you know, it's kind of like, well, which Heroic's going to turn up? Historically very good at Pro League, as we know. Fine. That's the other aspect to it as well. Then Astralis, surely they've got to click at some point, right? You know, and then our Evil Genius is turning up to play. Keep in mind, if you saw Evil Geniuses losing these best of ones to relatively unknown players, I should say, in the North American RMRs, you wouldn't have a lot of faith in this Evil Geniuses roster. But
every time I watch that team play, I really do just think, which one of these players will be in Valorant in 2 months? Like, that's just the fucking vibe I get when I watch that squad. It's calling to them. It's the fucking siren calling, just out of the camera shot.
So, I mean, look, for me, you know, in no particular order, it should be, honestly, Na'Vi, Heroic, and Astralis that go through. It should be. And you can interchange. I don't think Complexity have the overall firepower to get through that group. I think Evil Geniuses will falter. AGO probably are the team that should lose all their games, but they could easily upset a Complexity, easily upset an EG, in my opinion. Who knows what they go on to do if they get a bit of momentum rolling. So it's another wide open, you know, it's another, all of the groups have been crazy, as I said. So, I mean, for me, I don't expect Group D to be any different.
I even think for Na'Vi, the task's even maybe a little bit trickier, because not only do you have this outside of the game circumstance, but then if you look at the group, you've got two NA teams in your group. Mm. Well, in that scenario, anytime you take teams that just aren't in your ecosystem that you're not practicing against, that's a recipe for a potential upset. And even the factor of like, it, like, realistically, at this point in their careers, if you're someone like the Complexity players, it basically is the major final if you get to play against Na'Vi in a LAN match like this. Like, this is like the biggest game you play in your career thus far. So you are going fucking super ham. Meanwhile, you're another team there in theory looking past. They're supposed to be worried about Heroic primarily, Astralis, maybe EG if they respect the players. That's about it. So I would expect overall, here's the thing. I think Na'Vi's just got too much quality. Like, remember, top three gets out. They're going to get out somehow, but I would not be at all surprised if they do not take the number one spot. If I had to guess, in line with, just like Rich was saying, I would pick Perrault probably to be the team that just comes through with a consistent game and takes the top spot, maybe even wins all the games. Maybe this is their chance to steal a win off Na'Vi now that Na'Vi's a little bit weakened. Beyond that, I'm also with you on the Astralis one. I think the Far League one's enough. They already were an okay team. They were sort of like borderline. Every time they could have done something big, they didn't. But then every time you thought they'd be terrible, they were never totally terrible. They would always like win out against some other team around like wherever level they're at, like say like 12 to 15 or something. You had Far League. I think it's enough to get out of this group. I think I probably in third, but I would expect them to steal a map off most teams and actually beat the bottom three. So I would imagine, yeah. Remember, technically Astralis just has to beat Col, EG and AG on the throat. So I don't think that's implausible. To me, it's more about the main issue for me is like, I want to see, is Heroic going to be good? They better not shit the bed because they've also been mad underwhelming overall these last few months, bearing in mind they were in a potential position to maybe even win fucking Katowice. Like they were the team that had no issues. Like remember, they had everything going for them. And then the one other thing I'll say is this, is the reason why the Na'Vi storyline, I actually hope there's no issues in this group. Because if Na'Vi go out of this group and they cannot possibly win Pro League, it is just going to mean that unfortunately that entire like era storyline is pretty much killed dead. And the worst thing is, we'll always have in the back of our minds it was cause of all the shit that was outside of the game, even if no one wants that to be the case.
It'll always leave out what could have been sort of scenario.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're considering it's Simple and finally he's coming into his prime. You know, you think the story when it comes to Simple and just like everything lining up.
Also, that's what feels unfair. Exactly. If you're Simple, right, your whole thing's like, right, now's my time to have it where you're all of my stuff. You're not just the best. You have the best team. You are fucking Kenny S. You have the best team. You know what? You're Nico. You have a really good, like, FaZe Clan. Like, this is supposed to be my time to just start racking the trophies up. Because I always tell people, the thing about winning is it's so binary. You either won the tournament or you didn't. That people always forget. When you start winning, you can catch up to all those people who are way ahead of you. Like, people like Device, etc. Well, the premise goes, yeah, he's got four majors. You've got three. If you win the next one, there's two and he's got four. Remember, every time you win as well, he can't be winning. So if you're Simple, this was actually your time to do it. This was the year where you farm everything up. And then after that, by the way, you even just say to all the haters, fuck you, I even got all the accomplishments you wanted. You wanted to hate on me because I was just individually good. I did all the other shit as well. I won the major, I had my year, I had my grand slam. Like that's the ultimate way to stick it to him. So yeah, I just feel a bit bad for him in that sense. Like the timing couldn't be worse in that regard.
No doubt. Well, gentlemen, I think on this this is a good place to call it for the show. We're kind of leaving ourselves wondering what's going to happen for the following two groups. We will have a Pop Flash episode to sum up Pro League. So when the two groups are over and when we get through the playoffs, you know, we'll be catching up again. But as always, a real pleasure, guys. And also, guys, be sure to leave your comments down below. If you've made it this far in the show and you aren't subscribed, do us a favor. Subscribe. Come on. Seriously. You've made it this far. Subscribe. But yeah, it's been a pleasure, guys, and we'll see you next time. Take care.